veterinarians are using a lot of drugs, like gabapentin, trazodone, a lot of things to basically kind of gork these animals out before they come in the office so that they can handle them. And it's, unfortunately, it's gotten to the point where literally every animal coming in the door, they want them kind of sedated.
Hello, critical thinkers. Welcome to this new episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Here we question the conventional, explore the unconventional, and seek truth in health and wellness. I'm your host, Mike Vera, and I'm here with Dr. Judy Morgan, who is a holistic veterinarian with 40 years in practice. She specializes in integrative medicine for pets, and she's the author of multiple books on natural pet care. Dr. Morgan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
So I mentioned to you before recording, I speak with a lot of doctors who challenge the status quo, and I never really considered that there'd be similarly minded veterinarians out there. So I'm super interested by your background. Can you tell us a little more?
Sure. So there's actually a group dedicated to holistic medicine. It's the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association. It's sort of a subheading under the American Veterinary Medical Association. And unfortunately, we're a very small group. So the large conferences for veterinarians for continuing education, they'll get 30,000 veterinarians there. And it's mostly very traditional. At the AHVMA meetings, we get 300 if we're lucky. So we are a very small minority, unfortunately. I think we are starting to wake up some veterinarians to the fact that we've been doing a lot of things wrong. And so my journey began in traditional medicine. I went to vet school in the Midwest in the early 1980s. So talk about traditional, it was 100% traditional. And I was in practice for about 10 years before I discovered that there was another side to things. And thank God I did, because if I hadn't, I probably would have left the field. I was really frustrated with just chronic illness, not being able to heal anything, just seeing so much going on that was just, and I said, if I have to talk about fleas and heartworms and vaccines one more day of, you know, just the same repetitive and feeling like I wasn't helping my patients, I don't think I could have stayed in the field. So by finding out that there were alternatives out there that could make a difference, it totally changed the trajectory of my career. And I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if I hadn't gotten into this. And frankly, it was very, very accidental. I accidentally took a pet chiropractic course. I didn't know that that's what it was. It was a course called Veterinary Orthopedic Manipulation. And it talked in the advertisement, it talked about how we could help our patients heal more quickly after sports injuries or cruciate tear surgeries, that kind of thing. My business partner at the time did a lot of those surgeries. And I thought, well, I don't do those surgeries, but maybe I could help in the rehabilitation of these animals and make them heal faster. So it would be a great contribution to the practice. And then when I got to the course, I realized, oh my gosh, it took me a couple of hours to figure out what was going on. And I was like, this guy's talking about chiropractic on animals. I don't even know if I believe in chiropractic. And after I finished the course and I went back to practice, my very first patient in the door came in not walking, and I did an adjustment and the dog got up and ran out the door. And I kind of went, wow, there's something to this. And then of course I had to have all the guilt of all those patients that I could have used this for all, you know, for the past 10 years, and it would have been huge. So that just sort of opened my eyes. And then it just became this huge runaway train of what else can I learn? What other modalities are out there? So I dabbled in a lot of things. And then I started attracting clients who dabbled in a lot of things. So they would come to me with things like, oh, I'm using raindrop therapy and color therapy and water crystal therapy. And I was just like, whoa. So there's a lot out there.
Wow. Yeah. So I love hearing about people's wake up stories, you know, people who maybe, as you said, were frustrated by the system. It sounds like it was kind of this progressive thing where you were in the system, you had some frustrations, you discovered this new field that you had some even hesitations about, and it kind of opened up this world for you. I even read acupuncture was one of the things. And I've done acupuncture. And again, I never considered that dogs or pets would be doing acupuncture. So can you tell us a little bit about what would they use that for?
So in my journey, the thing that really hit my hot button is I took an acupuncture course, and I discovered there's four branches to traditional Chinese medicine, and they're the same four in traditional Chinese veterinary medicine, so TCVM. It's acupuncture, Tui Na, which is sort of a combo massage chiropractic, herbal therapy, and food therapy. And so I ended up taking courses in all of those, and my true specialty is TCVM food therapy. So I heal most of my patients with food. And it is, we can do the same for us as we can for the pets. And it's amazing the power of food. But acupuncture is a form of energy medicine, and we can do it using laser. We can use acupressure. So I can even prescribe point treatments for the pet parents to do at home. Or we can use needles. And then sometimes we'll do things like moxa, which is burning an herb to warm up the needles. We can put electrostim on the needles if we want something that's going to be a little longer lasting, a little more powerful. We think about it a lot for pain relief, but we can also do it to realign any of the systems. So if you've got an animal with an infection that you're trying to heal, acupuncture could be used for that. It can be used for pain relief, for arthritis, for back problems, disc problems, respiratory problems, GI problems, allergies, any inflammatory problem in the body. And it also can be used to help rejuvenate. So in a lot of our older patients who are becoming weak, they're not digesting their food as well, their hind end isn't working as well, acupuncture can be just wonderful to help bring back a lot of that function that they're losing.
And given the word holistic in your title, I'd guess that would be part of a comprehensive plan with other parts, or do you often use that kind of on its own too?
Either. So I had a lot of patients who would come in just for chiropractic or just for acupuncture. They all got food therapy no matter what, because food is the foundation of life. If we don't correct the diet, and let me tell you, the commercial diets that are made for our pets, I would say 95% of them are actually very detrimental to their health. Thankfully, the field of food for pets has changed a lot in the past 10 years, and we have a lot of new startup companies that are actually using real people food, you know, whole foods, human food for our pets. And when we start doing that, the changes that we see are amazing. When we have pets who have been fed dry kibble or highly processed food for their entire life, it would be the same as us eating at McDonald's for every meal, or eating only highly processed TV dinners and, you know, things that come in bags and boxes that it's not fresh food. And once it's been highly processed and it has a lot of synthetic dyes and chemicals added to it, it just wreaks havoc on the body. And so the same thing happens to our pets. That happens, I mean, we see the people who are eating the really poor diets, and we see the effects that it has on their health. And that same thing is happening to our pets. And so I'm really excited that we are now have some people in charge who are interested in getting to, I mean, why would we have dyes in pet food? Pets don't even see the same color spectrum that we do. They don't care if it's blue and red and green and orange. They just want something that tastes good. And so it's all just made as a marketing ploy to please the owner, but it has nothing to do with pet health.
So I'm glad you brought up food, because I had an interesting experience where I was in a pet store and I heard the guy in front of me say he bought the most expensive pet food. This is the best because it's most expensive. And then a week later, I was at a butcher shop buying a bunch of steak for myself. And another person there said the same exact thing. I'm buying the best food for my pet. I'm buying a bunch of steaks. It's the most expensive food I could buy. So it does sound like the guy at the butcher shop was doing something more in line with what you think is healthier for pets. But then I guess it brings up this whole question, because when you think about food for humans, there's a whole debate about vegan and carnivore. I don't know anyone feeding their dogs a vegan diet. I'm sure there are some out there.
There are some, and it is really? So bad. It is so bad. Yeah. And so cats are obligate carnivores. They need meat to survive. And if we don't feed them meat, we have to feed them a bunch of supplements. The main one is some of the B vitamins, but also taurine, which is an amino acid. And if cats don't get enough of that, they go blind, they develop heart failure, and they die. So in my practice, I had some vegan and vegetarian clients who wanted to insist on feeding their cats the same diet that they ate. And I wouldn't even take them as clients. I would fire them if they would not feed their cats meat because I knew their cats were going to die and I wasn't going to be part of that. The dogs that are vegans and vegetarians, and there are a few vegetarian dog foods, and a few of the holistic veterinarians are now touting feeding our dogs vegetarian diets. Dogs are not obligate carnivores, but they are sort of carnivorous omnivores. So they can survive on the grains and legumes and vegetarian diets, but they don't thrive. And, you know, the veterinarians who are promoting that are doing it because it's going to save the planet. Well, if we would use good regenerative farming, raising meat to feed people and animals is not a problem for the planet. And that's another whole topic. But yeah, there are people who want to do that. And the recipes, I do a lot of diet formulation, and the recipes that I formulate are very meat and organ heavy for our pets because that's what they're meant to eat. If you look at if a dog lived in the wild, what would it do? Well, it might go kill a deer or a rabbit, and it would eat the entire carcass. And so that's pretty meat heavy. Yes, they'll eat the stomach contents. So they're getting that little bit of vegetation that's already been pre-digested by the herbivore that it just ate. But that's what their natural diet would be. And then we get people who say, oh, evolution and dogs' digestive tract has changed. It really hasn't changed very much. They're still meant to be meatosauruses.
One thing I found interesting when I was doing research to prep for this conversation is, again, food, obviously humans are really, there's a lot of toxic chemicals in the food supply for humans. And it really made me wonder when you start to look, okay, the same things are in the animal food. Are they owned by the same companies?
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, they are, yeah. Which is pretty crazy. So it seems like Nestle and all these major food companies.
Bars. Yeah. Why do candy manufacturers have pet food? And Nestle Purina, their biggest driver of increase in sales over the past few years is their pet division, not their human food division. It's their pet food division. And so the big problem with these huge manufacturers like Mars and Colgate Palmolive and Nestle is they use rendered ingredients. So rendered ingredients, so if a cow dies out in the field, it can't go in the human food chain because it died of some disease and it's laying out in the field. When animals go to slaughter, if there's any cancerous pieces or bad parts of the meat, it goes into a big bucket, and then that bucket is sent to the rendering plant, and it is all melded down together. All those animals that died that didn't go to slaughter, they just died. They're all sent to a rendering plant, and they're cooked down in a big vat. And I'm sorry for anybody who's eating breakfast or lunch right now. So, but they're rendered in this big vat, and then that is dehydrated and made into a meat meal. And so it can be any animal in there. So when you see a meat meal or a meat and bone meal, it could be pig, cow, chicken, duck, zoo animal, whatever. It's a dead animal that got rendered. The problem with that is the head of the largest rendering corporation in America gave a speech at one of our feed control meetings. And he said, it is virtually impossible to have a rendered product that does not contain euthanasia solution. Because animals who were killed with euthanasia solution sometimes sort of accidentally end up in that big vat. So when you're feeding these rendered, highly processed products, you're actually feeding your dog and cat euthanasia solution. And FDA has known about this since the 1990s. And I used to have a big thing posted in my veterinary clinic that talked about this, that in the late 1990s, veterinarians were having a problem euthanizing animals. We would give them euthanasia solution to euthanize them, and they wouldn't die. And it would take 2 and 3 times the dose that it should have taken. And it was found that that was because they had been eating small doses of euthanasia solution in their pet food for so long that that their liver learned how to metabolize the product. And it became a huge problem. There's only been, that I know of, there might have been another one, but one recall for euthanasia solution. They know it's in there. They've tested it. And they'll put out a statement that says, oh, yeah, we found euthanasia solution in this brand. We're not recalling it. We don't think it's enough to cause a problem. I'm sorry. My dog or cat eating any euthanasia solution, that's too much. I don't care if there's one drop in 100 pounds. That is too much. But they consider it non-actionable.
Wow. Yeah, it's really a common theme on the show that it's not always the best move to rely on institutions to make the best decisions for the health of ourselves or our pets, that we really need to do that critical thinking. That's really disturbing. Well, while we're on the topic of food, this is definitely an unrelated question. And I suspect something that won't go viral on YouTube, but I don't have a pet primarily because one of my hesitations, one out of two, is I hear stories of people who need to drain certain glands for their dogs. They need to drain anal glands. And so I'm thinking that doesn't seem like like all dogs just come with some kind of setting that happens by default.
I never do that with my dogs. And I've had hundreds of dogs. I never have to deal with that because they're fed a good diet.
That was my question. Yeah. So I would imagine that maybe the crappy food that dogs are eating is maybe contributing to that problem.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, perfect.
Wasn't a big deal in my practice. Like, we didn't have to do that often because my patients were eating good food.
Yeah. Well, let's take a step back for a moment. Obviously, you know, there's a lot to criticize within the system. Do you think the system gets anything right?
Well, let's see. The food that the veterinarians recommend, because those big food companies give a lot of money to the vet schools and to the veterinary conferences and all that stuff. So the food that the veterinarians recommend is bad. So that's one. Second, the veterinary recommendations for vaccinations are way over the top bad. And we can get more into that. But so that's the second thing that's wrong. Third thing that's wrong is the amount of immune suppressants, pesticides, and chemicals, overuse of antibiotics, the drugs that we are throwing at these animals, we're killing them. Half of the drugs that are being prescribed cause cancer. And why do one out of every, actually it's like three out of every four dogs over age 10 are going to have a cancer diagnosis? Why? That's crazy. And the chemical pesticides that we are putting on our pets and feeding to our pets are killing them right and left. And the veterinary profession's in denial. And the FDA, I mean, we had a I and a group of us had a conversation with the FDA after there were a few hundred thousand complaints about these pesticides that came out in 2014, the whole class of them. We said, look, there's hundreds of thousands of complaints and tens of thousands of deaths. Why aren't you doing something about this? And they said, oh, we don't think there's enough. Like, not enough. Like, if 250,000 complaints of animals dying and hemorrhaging and having seizures, that's not enough. They're like, oh, well, you know, there's been millions of doses sold. And I'm like, I don't care. You know, Big Pharma also has a huge influence, just like it does on the human side, has a huge influence on, again, they fund the veterinary schools, they fund the veterinary conferences, they fund the veterinary students. So, you know, and when I was in school, I didn't know what I know now. And at the end of our junior year, there was a pharmaceutical company called Upjohn, and they've been, you know, they got sold many times over, but all of their products were in red and white boxes. So you knew if it was one of their products. So they took our entire junior class and we all went to Kalamazoo, Michigan to tour the plant, which is really cool to see, you know, the inside of a pharmaceutical company and how they do things. But they wined and dined us. And I mean, yeah, you know, it was just it was a huge upsell. And so, of course, when I graduated and I would stand in the pharmacy looking for the antibiotic or, you know, drug of choice for whatever I was treating, if I saw the red and white box, I was like, oh, yeah, those are good guys. And always grab that first. And so that still goes on. you know, at different levels, but you see all the big advertising and the big, everything is labeled, brought to you by, you know, if, when we go to the veterinary conferences, here's the massage station, come get a free massage, brought to you by this drug company or this food company, get your photo taken here. You know, they have celebrities that show up that you can get their autograph and blah, blah, blah. And it has a huge influence.
I didn't realize it was actually the FDA that's in charge of regulating the pet food as well.
Food and drugs.
Food, yeah. I just did an interview with Dr. Renee Dufault, who was an FDA whistleblower, how many years ago she discovered mercury in high fructose corn syrup. And, you know, you can look up her name on Google Scholar. You'll find the studies. And she said, hey, this is a problem. And she studied how it actually contributes to ADHD and autism as a component. And the FDA basically told her to shut up about this and to stop investigating. So unfortunately, I'm not too surprised to hear that all those complaints come in and they say, hey, you know, it's still not enough. And, you know, it sounds very similar too to the medical training that doctors get, the pharmaceutical reps. I mean, just so many similarities. I do wonder, you mentioned vaccines. That's one of the things that's actually partially what prompted this conversation today. I was speaking with Dr. Peter McCullough, who specifically mentioned after a conversation with you that it's possible the pets are getting overjabbed. And I'm not a doctor of any sort. I'm a board certified health coach, so I don't really know what the take is on vaccines. I wonder if they're all mRNA now as well, because there's a big push for that in the market. Mm-hmm. But what should pet owners really think about this if they want to make the best decision for their pets?
So for years, the recommendation is that every kitten and puppy receive at least a series of three puppy vaccines or kitten vaccines. And it's not just one. There might be one injection, but inside that injection, you've got distemper, hepatitis, parvovirus, parainfluenza, 2 to 4 varieties of leptospirosis. It can have coronavirus in there. It can have Lyme vaccine and you can have rabies vaccine. And so, you know, we take these little puppies and a Great Dane and a Chihuahua get the same dose of vaccine. So, yeah, wow. If you're the Chihuahua owner, you're freaking out.
Is that why Chihuahuas are always such jerks?
It's funny. My daughter wanted to adopt a Chihuahua. And I was like, are you kidding? That they bite everybody. Yeah. But I have seen a few nice ones. I don't know. But they do tend to I think I call it short man syndrome. They're like, they're so small. And they're just like, I just have to defend myself all the time.
I don't mean to offend any Chihuahuas listening.
Yeah,
that's
sorry.
Just a joke.
We're short people.
Yeah.
But so these poor little puppies, by the time they're 4 months old, they may have had 30 vaccines, which is crazy. I mean, it's the same thing we're doing to our kids. And then for years and years and years, it's been, you get that card in the mail every year, time to come in for Fluffy's vaccines. We should be saying it's time to come in and have an examination and maybe some diagnostic lab work just to check Fluffy's health. But instead, it was always, here's your vaccine card. And so about, oh gosh, maybe 10 years ago, AVMA and AHA, which is the American Animal Hospital Association, they came out finally and said, hey, we think that vaccinating every year is overkill, and we probably could do every 3 to 5 years. So now on the website, it says the annual vaccines are now recommended every 3 to 5 years. In reality, that's still too often, because we can do a titer, which is a blood test that says, hey, we've got antibodies against this disease or we don't. And you can even get a level of, you know, what the antibody response is. So for instance, one of my dogs, she had a heart problem and we were thinking of taking her to Japan to have a heart surgery. And in order to do that, they have to have proof of vaccination for rabies. So she hadn't had a rabies vaccine in about 7 years. And I said, well, let me just do a titer and see where she is. And that'll give me an idea of whether I want to do this. And so anything over 0.5 is considered protective. Now, this dog hadn't had a vaccine in 7 years. Her level was 14. 0.5 is protective. She's 14 after 7 years. Why are we giving this every 3 years, which rabies is the only required vaccine? So that's the other myth. Veterinarians will say, oh, it's required for your dog to have all these vaccines. Required by who? By you? Rabies is required. Yes, that's a zoonotic disease. Like, you know, you get rabies, you probably die. Really good chance of dying. And you know, your dog gets rabies and bites somebody, you know, bad. Anyway, So, and some of these vaccines are highly, highly, highly reactive. And the other problem is that the veterinarians tend to go with a one size fits all. All puppies get these 30 vaccines. Well, if you have your Chihuahua living in a high rise in Manhattan, that's a lot different than the farm dog living in South Carolina that never comes in the house. Hugely different. Why would they all get the same thing? For our indoor cats, why would we vaccinate them for things that are only transmitted by direct contact with another sick cat? And you have one cat who lives inside and never sees the light of outdoors. So we need to start thinking a little more critically and individually about what our pets need. And we have really good information that if we don't start those puppy and kitten vaccines early, if we wait a little longer, like don't start until they're 3 to 4 months old, a lot of times one vaccine or maybe at the most two will suffice. And then when we do their titers, some of those will hold that immunity for life. So why are we vaccinating even every 3 to 5 years if we know that they've still got antibodies 10 years later? So in my clinic, we did titers all the time. But what happens is a lot of veterinarians don't believe in titers, which it's crazy. I mean, it's science. Why would you not believe it? It's like, did you skip immunology class? Did you skip virology class? Like, where were you? So if we want to do right by our patients, we should be doing titers and saying, hey, look, he's protected. We don't have to give that vaccine. And if they're not protected against something, then you can have the option of, well, yeah, he is exposed. He goes to the dog park. He goes to daycare. He goes to, you know, dog events, whatever. But we get these boarding, grooming, daycare, dog show facilities who insist on annual vaccines. So we have to educate the veterinarians. And then two, we have to educate all those places where our dogs go to educate them on, no, you don't need to be requiring 27 vaccines. Like there's an influenza dog vaccine. It covers two kinds of influenza. I didn't even carry it in my practice. It's like, this is dumb. It's so rare. And if you have an outbreak, it's like, okay, we know there's an outbreak in this little pocket right now. So how about we all just keep our dogs home for a couple of weeks and, you know, then we'll be good to go. So we need to look at that really differently, because actually there's been good studies in cats showing that vaccines contribute to chronic kidney disease, which a lot of our older cats die from chronic kidney disease. Cats also really like to make tumors anywhere you give them a vaccine. They're malignant, they're deadly. And we had dogs come in that had been, you know, vaccinated their whole life, and they'd come in and I'd have to take a 13-pound tumor off. It's like, okay, that was from a vaccine. Oh, great, he's got one on each side. So, you know, anyway.
Hey, have you noticed how broken conventional medicine is, and it only treats symptoms instead of solving root problems? I mean, it's no wonder more people than ever struggle with chronic health issues, stubborn weight gain, low energy, and plenty more challenges. Actually, here's how Mike, a client of mine at Avantia Health Optimization, feels about our hyper-personalized approach.
Number one, you save me focus of attention. I have other things that are pressing and pending. I no longer have the playing time. So I need somebody to help me get the information I need specifically. You're saving me hours upon hours of time, but you're also saving me the youthfulness and clarity you have of cutting through the chase. So you have saved me time, financial money, the thinking and the labor, the intense labor, and that is worth all the money in the world.
So as most of you know, I'm Mike Vera, board-certified health and wellness coach, host of Healthy and Awake podcast, and founder of Avantia Health Optimization. We deliver hyper-personalized coaching, addressing lifestyle as the missing link. Whether you're battling chronic health challenges, aiming for sustainable weight loss, or you're a busy executive or athlete needing peak performance, I'm your guy. Your first session is just $1. So you can try out health coaching, get a feel for it, and you can visit AvantiaHealthOptimization.com or visit the link in the show notes. So check out Avantia, because your health deserves solutions that truly work for you. I think I've heard you say that they have even more options. In one of the videos I saw on your YouTube channel, I believe you were saying with rabies vaccine in particular, there's a thimerosal option that's given by default, which is mercury for anyone who doesn't know. And there might be other options that people can ask about.
There is a thimerosal-free rabies vaccine. You have to ask for it. It's, I think it's made by Merial, and it's called TF, thimerosal-free. But it's interesting. People who follow me, they'll walk into their veterinary office and say, I want the TF vaccine. I want the thimerosal-free. And half the time, the veterinarians look at them like they have no idea what they're talking about because they have never researched that. And then they'll say, we don't carry that vaccine. We're not going to get it. The vaccine costs like 10 cents a dose more. Like, this is crazy.
Really? I would have thought it'd be a lot more because they like to get people that way.
So some of my clients have said, well, I'll buy the whole tray. I'll buy all 25 vaccines in that tray if you'll get it in.
Oh, I see.
And they still won't do it. And then people walk in and they say, I'd rather have a titer. I don't want the vaccine. And the veterinarians that don't want to do the titers, they say, well, we charge $600 for a titer. They're not $600. Kansas State University charges $40. So it went up to $45 to get a titer run. And yet the veterinarians are charging $600. So, you know, the clients are like, that's highway robbery. I know what you pay for it. I'm not paying you $600. So then, because it's easier and faster to jab them with a vaccine and get them out the door than it is to take them and draw the blood and spin it down and send it to the lab and get it blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like a 10-step process. So I get it. It's like, okay, yeah, mark it up. Make it $100. I don't care. But $600, and it's funny because on the veterinary forums online, I see the veterinarians joking about it and go, oh, I solved that problem. I just tell them it's $600 a titer and they go away. And I'm like, you know, you're making a bad name for yourself. This is not good. And you wonder why people have this huge new distrust for the profession. It's, you know, people are getting educated. People are coming in and saying, hey, I want to feed my dog a whole food diet. I'm going to make it myself. And the veterinarians, I mean, the first thing you get is, no, you can't do that. They'll die. You can't possibly balance a homemade diet. Well, yeah, you can. I mean, think about it. When you sit down for your breakfast, lunch, and dinner, have you calculated all the vitamin and mineral analysis of everything that you eat and made sure that every meal is complete and balanced?
Not particularly. Maybe when I'm in an intense workout program, but not on a typical day, no.
Yeah. And I'm like, we've all raised kids and we didn't kill them. And I mean, I remember having conniptions when my daughter was like 4 or 5 because she would never eat meat. Mm. And I kept saying to the pediatrician, she doesn't eat meat, she's going to die. And the pediatrician is like, don't worry, it'll work itself out. And I mean, she's fine.
Yeah.
So, but people get really crazy and the veterinarians get really crazy. You know, what we, I was guilty of this for that first 10 years before I knew any better. You know, we would tell people, oh, feed this food. It's 100% complete and balanced, which is a myth as well, because when those foods are tested, 94% of canned foods did not meet the regulatory values and 65% of dry foods did not meet it. So that's a myth, complete and balanced, first of all. But we used to tell people, don't add anything to it. Don't dare give them any table scraps or any other people food because you'll unbalance the diet. What a bunch of malarkey.
Well, along the same lines, because I know we landed here by starting on vaccines and the pharmaceutical companies now seem to be making ads on TV for dogs. I was blown away when I saw an ad for dogs right after an ad for Jardiance, where some lady's dancing around, you know, with her chronic condition. She's like the happiest in the world. And then they show a dog advertisement. Some of these dogs are getting antidepressants, anti-anxiety. I want to specifically mention Tramadol because my sister's dog is taking that. So I guess, what's your assessment of the landscape on pharmaceuticals for pets?
It's awful. Like I said, we're giving, so now we have these monoclonal antibody injections for arthritis. Oh my gosh, dogs and cats are dropping dead. They won't eat for months. They're having seizures, tremors. Again, this drug has not been taken off the market.
Not to interrupt you, but that monoclonal antibodies is one of the things that Joe Rogan was pushing during COVID for COVID, saying it's great. Is that the same thing?
Well, this is a vaccine against things that the body makes. So if you're taking blood from somebody who has antibodies to COVID, for instance, and you're giving that to someone who needs those antibodies, that's different. So when you're using it to give the body something to heal, that's one thing. When you're using it to shut down, so it's shutting down nerve growth factor. Not good. Nerve growth factor is in all of our organs, all of our tissues, and it performs a lot of really important functions. And so when you shut it down, yeah, the arthritis pain goes away, except now the dog's dead. Great. Yep. Not painful anymore. So, and FDA actually sent a warning letter to the veterinarians about these products. But of course, the drug company turned right around and sent a letter to the veterinarians touting how wonderful they are, you know, right on the coattails. So FDA actually tried to step up and say, ooh, we're watching this one. Of course, they're watching. They're not doing anything. But so, yeah, we've got so many things that we're giving to our animals. We know that these immune suppressants lead to cancer. Mm-hmm. Super infections, cancer. When you take out the immune system, and we can jump back on vaccines for a second, the vaccines are labeled to be given to healthy animals. Well, if you have a dog with cancer, there's no way that's healthy. Yet when you talk to the oncologist, they, oh yeah, he can have his vaccines while he's on, you know, chemotherapy, no problem. How is that not a problem?
Yeah. I do think that there's a kind of scam going on with the pharmaceuticals for pets. I swear some people are taking these anti-anxiety pills for their dogs. I have no proof, but I do suspect it. What about trazodone in particular? This is kind of a selfish question because I did mention my sister's dog in particular. And it just breaks my heart, the thought of, I don't know if it is causing harm or not. I know a lot of other people giving that to their pets. Is that, I think it's an opioid too, right?
It's used a lot. And the problem with all medications and prescription diets, they're meant to be used for short-term use. It's like you take an antibiotic for 5 to 7 days to take care of whatever infection you have. You don't take it for life. These immune suppressants, like, okay, they've got an autoimmune disease going on. Great. Let's give them the immune suppressant for a week, get things back under control. Now let's build up the immune system to have an appropriate response. Let's take away all the things that are causing the body to react that way to begin with. So trazodone, and this is something I was just complaining about the other day, veterinarians, and I will say there are a lot of ill-behaved pets out there. Like I own some. I have two puppies that were COVID puppies, so they weren't exposed to anything. They're nuts. Like, they were exposed to our family and our animals on our farm. And I took one of them into town. We were picking up a new truck. He had never seen traffic. He lost his mind. He had never seen other people walking. He was crazed.
A lot of kids like that now too, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah. My granddaughter's a COVID baby too. She didn't see other kids until she was 9 months old and she saw them and she was like, there's little people.
Yeah. Wow.
But so veterinarians are using a lot of drugs like gabapentin, trazodone, a lot of things to basically kind of gork these animals out before they come in the office so that they can handle them. And it's, unfortunately, it's gotten to the point where literally every animal coming in the door, they want them kind of sedated. Trazodone is, I don't know if they're using it for anxiety or because the dog's a little nuts.
Probably a little of both.
Okay. So we know now the microbiome in the gut, there's the gut-brain axis. The microbiome in the gut controls a lot of the behavior. So again, let's fix the diet. Let's fix the microbiome. We're doing a lot of fecal microbiota transplants. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Mm. So for anxiety and for bad behavior. And again, acupuncture and herbs and food can work really well for behavior issues. So we need to get away from it. So using trazodone, so for instance, if an animal, one of our horses, actually it's a mini mule, had colic and had to have surgery. And so when I brought him home, he has to be in a stall for 30 days and then in a little tiny paddock for 30 days. And so he's a little crazy because he's isolated from everybody else. And so I was texting the surgeon and I said, oh, he's really not happy about this. I mean, I understand he has to stay in. And the answer was, well, we can give him trazodone. And I thought, you know what? We're going to get through this. We are not drugging this poor animal. He's just upset because he's a herd animal and he's not with the herd. And so, you know, using it short term, like if I had to do it, if he was going to do harm to himself and I had to do it for a couple of days, I would have. But we instituted behavior modification. I gave him some toys in the stall and I put on country music that's on all the time and he's got fans. And, you know, it's like, okay, let me try behavior modification first. So we put somebody in the stall across from you that, okay, they're now in confinement too, but it's just so you have company. So I think that we need to work a lot harder on alternatives for mental health for our pets instead of drugs.
Well, so you want to explore alternatives other than drugs. And so maybe this next question is not the best timing, but I do have one more question on drugs, but from a different perspective. I know a lot of people now giving their pets CBD. I have a story of a friend. They gave their dog who had cancer. The dog had just a few months to live, maybe 2 months to live. They gave their dog cannabis infused coconut oil and the dog lived for years longer. So any thoughts on these types of things being used on pets?
I use CBD on my pets all the time. So CBD for pets, the maximum allowable limit for THC is 0.3%. So, you know, products that are available are not going to have high THC. Now, if you give them enough CBD, so I had a 10 pounder who had bladder cancer, diagnosed at age 15, and CBD was part of his protocol along with herbs and diet and a lot of things, a lot of mushroom therapy. I'm a huge fan of mushrooms. Oh my gosh. But the CBD that I was giving him was horse strength CBD, which my husband takes the horse strength CBD for a little cancer issue going on.
How many milligrams is that?
1,000.
Wow.
I think so. But my little guy passed after age 17 and he didn't die from his bladder cancer. And when he was originally diagnosed, he had 5 tumors in his bladder. When I repeated the ultrasound about a year later, he had 3. And I said, going in the right direction. So I'm good with me. And he was happy as a clam. So yeah, CBD is amazing. If you want true cannabis, you're going to have to kind of go through the black market. It is available. And there's a veterinarian, Dr. Rob Silver, who is a cannabis expert for pets. He's also a mushroom expert, great herbalist, great guy. So if you ever want to interview someone about cannabis and CBD for pets, he's your man, lives in Colorado, of course.
Cool. Okay. I'll look into him. One question that I feel must be asked because it's a common theme on the show is about circadian rhythm. And I don't know if this is a topic you've covered at all, but I think about this all the time because we talk about food and exercise for people and the way that light affects our biology is often undiscussed completely. And now we live in this world where, you know, we're giving pets the same crappy food that we're eating. They have the same habits around poor lighting and artificial light at night. And so I do wonder how it's affecting the pets at all. Is that something you think about at all?
I haven't really addressed it, but I have friends who talk about this sort of thing a lot in the veterinary world. So it's not just circadian rhythms, but EMFs. I did a great presentation about VOCs and the air quality inside our homes and how that affects our pets. We're kind of killing all of us. And it's really interesting when we look at some of the forever chemicals and the nasty carcinogenic chemicals that are in our environment, in our home. Cats have much higher concentrations than dogs, and dogs have much higher concentrations than us. So our pets super concentrate all those chemicals. So if you're using all these nasty cleaning chemicals in your home and you have pets, that's bad news. Birds are even more sensitive. Birds will just drop dead. If you burn food in a Teflon pan in your kitchen and your bird's anywhere nearby, they'll drop dead.
Yeah.
So, but cats, because they, you know, they're on the floor, they're on the furniture, they're on everything. And then they groom themselves so much, they are just super concentrating all those chemicals.
I hate to keep repeating myself, but kids, same thing. You know, I see newborn babies walking around where they just clean the floor with some potentially toxic chemicals, and then they're putting their hands in their mouth. Same thing with pets, for
well,
sure.
Well, what's really interesting is fipronil is one of the topical chemicals for flea and tick prevention in dogs and cats. It's been around for a very long time. And great studies out of Europe, children in France have fipronil in their hair. So when they analyzed hair samples, all the waterways in Europe are contaminated with fipronil. And they're blaming it on all the topicals that we're using on dogs. And then the dogs are swimming in the waterway, and then we're washing the dogs, and all this goes down the drain. And they did a great study with three dogs in a wading pool. One dog had no flea and tick chemicals on board. The second dog had an oral flea and tick chemical on board, and the third one had a topical on board. They put all these three dogs in this little wading pool, just a little kiddie pool, for 3 minutes. And then when they took them out and analyzed all three dogs had the chemicals, both the oral and the topical, in their systems.
Hmm.
So, you know, when they say, oh, put it on your pet, and, oh, it's fine for them to sleep with your kids, it's fine for your kids to hug them, pet them, kiss them. Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that's one example out of many, because I know they put pet food in cans, which has BPA and PFAS forever chemicals.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the linings of the dry kibble bags. Oh, the PFAS is bad news.
Here's the thing that I think is so interesting. I talk about health for humans all the time. I do suspect a lot of people will listen to this episode and take 1,000 times more seriously this advice for their pets because of how much people love their pets. And I think a lot of people will find it much easier to implement those habit changes for their dogs, cats, parrots, and all that. So I'm looking forward to hearing that feedback. I do have kind of a wild card question here. I don't know where this will go, but AI is a big topic nowadays. I've seen some headlines that they're using AI to figure out how to communicate to animals. Dolphins are going to be, I believe, the first that we can kind of communicate back and forth with, which is pretty crazy. So, I mean, thoughts on that might be a tough question to answer, but what are your thoughts on AI in general as they maybe affect the world of pet owners and having a pet?
Well, I see it advertised for the veterinarians all the time, using it for diagnostic algorithms and that sort of thing. And I think for helping with diagnostics, it may be great. I don't really know. It's interesting. I have two children. My daughter is the COO of Naturally Healthy Pets, and she is 30 years old and 100% against AI. I will not allow our team to use it at all. And part of it is because on social media, other, you know, groups that we work with, we'll see pictures, AI generated pictures. And like, there's the guy sitting there with his dog on a park bench, except the bench has no legs or it doesn't have a seat, or, you know, it's like, okay, if you're going to do this, let's get it right. So she's very much against it. My son, who's 35, was just visiting. He is all in on AI. And so, and he actually just wrote a book on AI, and he gave it to me to read. And he said, maybe this will help you. It's not published yet, but he gave me the manuscript. And he said, maybe this will help you understand what AI is and what it does. And after I read his book, I was like, oh, I get it now. I mean, AI is only as good as the information that you feed it. So, so you have to feed it good information to get good information back. So he says, when you see those, you know, like really poorly done AI photos or graphics or whatever, it's because it was given bad information. And, you know, then the person just ran with it and didn't fix it. So he's working actually on a phone app for people with dementia. Instead of just throwing, you know, generic questions at a person, the AI will learn, like, you feed it in some information about that person's past, like who was their favorite football team, what's the name of their children, what's the name of their relatives. It basically feed it a lot of information about that person's history, so that when they're interacting, it's very personalized, and so it helps slow down that dementia confusion. So, you know, when he talks about it, and you kind of look at it from a responsible standpoint, I think it can be great. Now, with that said, there is on TikTok a pet supplement company in China that has been using AI-generated videos of me. So it's they were taking my YouTube videos, and then my mouth is moving, but it doesn't match what's being said. And what's being said is even in my voice. Like, they fed the AI my voice, and I'm basically recommending these supplements for this company that are horrible. I would never recommend them. And so it can be very bad, because that's going to give me a bad reputation. People are going to be like, why would you recommend that? That's got all these horrible ingredients in it. It's like, well, I won't. So we've actually had, I think, three companies that we've had to issue cease and desist. But, you know, when they're in China, like, you know, yeah, you can tell them, you can report them to TikTok, but which that will usually get them to shut it down. So that one did stop making new videos, but they have 9 videos of me up that they haven't taken down.
You know what they will pull? Any of the clips where we talk about pet vaccines, they'll pull that, no problem, but they won't pull the fake ads.
Right. So you know, AI, good, can be. Bad? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting and scary and exciting all at the same time.
Exactly.
And I think I will talk to those dolphins, but we've covered a lot today. I'm sure a lot of people might be looking for more info. I mean, because there's definitely even deeper dives that we could take on any of these subjects. I was looking at your website, and it is just a library of information. So I guess, where can people find out more about you and your work if they want to dig a little deeper?
DrJudyMorgan.com. We keep it very simple. The company is called Naturally Healthy Pets. So NaturallyHealthyPets.com gets you to the same place. We also have Dr. Judy U, which is a huge number of courses given by me and other veterinarians, other experts in the holistic field. So, you know, our goal is to empower pet parents to take control, know how to talk to your veterinarian without being adversarial, how to get them to bend and mold to what you want. And, you know, knowledge is power. I have 9 books. They're all available on Amazon. They're also available on the website. And, you know, the books give you that base, you know, so we start probably the most basic one is Raising Naturally Healthy Pets, which talks about getting a new pet and what vaccines do you need? What vaccines do you not need? What do you have to do for parasite prevention? What natural alternatives are there? Which there's natural alternatives for literally everything. You don't ever have to take a drug if you don't want to. You don't ever have to give a drug to your pet. And by the way, if your pet is prescribed a medication, the first thing that you should say, and this goes with your doctor, nurse, for yourselves, for your pets, what are the potential side effects of this medication? Because when you go to the pharmacy and pick up a medication, you get the whole big list of, you know, interacts with this, don't take with this, don't, you know, drink alcohol, whatever. You get a prescription from the veterinarian. It's like, here's your bottle of pills.
Yeah.
Ask, what are the side effects? And it's really interesting. My mom was in the hospital and a nurse came in to hang 3 antibiotics on her IV pole. And I said, what are those for? And she said, those are the antibiotics the doctor prescribed. I said, no doctor has seen her yet. What are you talking about? Well, the doctor read her chart. And I said, I chased her out of the room and wouldn't let her do anything until the doctor came in. So finally saw the doctor. And I said to the doctor, do you know the side effects of those 3 antibiotics? And she said, well, not off the top of my head. I said, bad news for you, because I do.
Good for you.
And she said, oh, are you a doctor? I said, I'm a veterinarian and I know the side effects of those medications. And you are going to tell me the side effects of those medications before you will prescribe them. And I made her look them up on her phone, standing in the ER at 4 o'clock in the morning. And after she finished reading all the side effects, I said, would you give that to your 84-year-old mother? And she goes, so after our conversation, we settled on one, the one that I wanted.
Yeah. Good for you, because that it does take bravery. A lot of people are intimidated by the folks in white coats. And, you know, fair enough. They've had a lot of education and all that. I get it. But that doesn't mean
they're not infallible.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people over the past 4 or 5 years have definitely learn that. And there's no reason that you can't stand up for yourself and ask perfectly reasonable questions for informed consent with medical procedures. But Dr. Judy Morgan, I really appreciate your time. I know my audience does too. Thank you so much, folks.
Thank you.
Stay healthy, stay awake.